Today on the Pro-Life Podcast, the Netherlands has seen a 20% increase in this type of death amongst young people. It's probably not the one you're thinking of. We definitely need to talk about this. Let's get started. Happy Thursday, Pro-Life family. Pull up a chair. Welcome to the table. We're glad you're here. I've got my coffee. This is like round four. So I have some thoughts on these topics. Mm-hmm. But first, friends, glad we're all in the room together. Could you introduce yourselves to the audio listeners?
Yes.
Visually, we'll wait for the, visual people.
For sure. Kim Schwartz, Director of Media and Communication.
I'm Bailey Barton, and I work in the Development Department at Texas Right to Life.
Brent Clearman, head nerd? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Can't say that. There's a lot of nerds around here. IT guy. Okay, cool. So topics of the day. Texas is leading in a stat that I'm not super happy about, but there are some answers. The Netherlands is leading in a stat that I'm really upset about. Where do you want to start on this Netherlands thing? Let's start there.
There's a good chance I cry in this episode, people. So
this is upsetting.
Yeah, doctors are going to euthanize a healthy 28-year-old woman. And that's really the story. There's not anything that's deeper than this. There's not any complication or anything. This is a physically healthy 28-year-old woman who she's the one who requested euthanasia. She has a history of mental illness, autism, borderline personality disorder, depression. And her psychiatrist said, it's not going to get better than this. And so she requested from the government to end her own life with physician-assisted suicide, and that was approved, and she is scheduling her death date in May. And that's really it. That's the background of the story, and it breaks your heart. And, I read a lot of the background on this story. It says that she was tired of living despite being in love with her boyfriend, a 40-year-old IT programmer, living in a nice house with her two cats. She recalled her psychiatrist saying, it's never going to get better. And she said, at that point...
What? Never?
Never.
That's
she says...
so short-sighted.
That's the psychiatrist said, it's never going to get better, which is a huge misstep in your duty as a physician.
It sounds criminal.
Yes.
It does, doesn't it?
Yes. And it's like, you don't know. Like, how could you say that? And so she said, at that point, it was very clear I decided to die. I was always very clear that if it doesn't get better, I can't do this anymore. Yeah. And if you heard anybody else say that, anybody else in any other circumstance besides the right to die discourse, that discussion, you would say, like, no, it does get better. Like, you can do this. Life is worth living, and that you are valuable and loved by God.
Yep.
But all of a sudden, whenever it's like, well, I'm the one deciding, I'm going to die in this way, I'm going to plan it ahead of time. And then people are like, oh yeah, that's fine. That's your decision. That's your choice. No, it's not. And I really want to push pro-lifers on this too, because in the material that I've read and watched about this story, whenever it says, like, oh, despite the fact that she has a boyfriend who she's been with for a while, and they have a nice house, and they have their cats, and they have, like, people, this woman has people in her life who love her, they tend to focus on that. And it's either like, oh, look, your life is worth living, you have all these things. Or they'll say, maybe if you would have had kids with your boyfriend, or, like, would have gotten married and have kids, then, you know, your life would be more fulfilling and you wouldn't think this. And I think both of those are problem to even just like open that rabbit trail necessarily, because your value doesn't come from your circumstances. Mm-hmm. Whether she has that or not doesn't make it better or worse that she wants to end her own life. Like, she is valuable because God loves her, and God made her and wants her to exist. And so we need to continue to pray. Her name is Zariah Terbeek. And just pray that she'll have a change of heart because there are so many issues that pro-lifers really need to communicate on this clearly mm-hmm. and not get sidetracked by these other things. We see it with the issue of abortion too, about like, oh, well, abortion might be wrong because there are other options, or because if you have a fetal diagnosis, then maybe that diagnosis is wrong. The answer is abortion is wrong because killing is wrong, and suicide is wrong because killing is wrong. Even if that is your own life and you don't see your own dignity, you have dignity.
Yeah, exactly. And we're seeing, you know, as we see with the abortion side of things, this culture of death, this death cult, really, they take words and they're not using accurate definitions for them. Like, it is compassionate to allow her to pursue physician-assisted suicide. That's not compassionate. What's the definition of compassion? Compassion would be coming alongside her and sharing in her suffering and telling her that her life is worth living. It's not compassionate to delete her. That's not compassion. We talk about dignity. She wants to die with dignity. She doesn't feel like it is, you know, dignified the way she's living. We see this a lot with the abortion mm-hmm. side, that people do not treat unborn children with dignity. What dignity are we talking about here? Like, y'all's definition of dignity is wacky. Like, it is. It just doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. I think that Pope John Paul II said it really well. I'm just going to read this little excerpt. It says, "None of us lives to himself, and none of us dies to himself. If we live, we live to the Lord, and if we die, we die to the Lord. So then whether we live or whether we die, we are the Lord's," quoting Romans. "Dying to the Lord means experiencing one's death as the supreme act of obedience to the Father, being ready to meet death at the hour willed and chosen by him, which can only mean when one's earthly pilgrimage is completed." And I know as believers, like, we obviously have a different perspective of our identity because we are made in the image of Christ. Everyone is. We just... Mm-hmm.
We're aware of it.
And so I think it's really hard for believers to get into these conversations with non-believers about the dignity of life. Like, they don't know where it comes from.
Yeah.
And so they're able to say, die with dignity, physician-assisted suicide, which we know is not dignified.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the Lord's will.
Mm-mm. Yeah. And I think that, like, whenever the other side is saying, like, well, death with dignity, that this is compassion, it's rooted in this idea of, like, well, I'm the one choosing it. And so as long as I can be in control, as long as I'm the one who has really just the ultimate control over the situation, then, like, people assume that that's, because that's what I would want, then that's what is best for this person. But really, like, humans don't have the greatest track record of making the best choices, even when at the time you're thinking, like, yeah, this is a good idea. We've all been in the situation where you think something is a solid idea and then you do it and you, like, regret it.
Right.
And the people in this situation, in any suicidal mindset, they're not thinking with that actual, like, the control that they're seeking and the idea of, like, oh, I'm making this with a clear mind. That's not actually true. And there was a study done by the people done surveying. It was a study done surveying people who jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge and survived, like attempting to take their own life. And then these people survived. So the researchers surveyed those survivors and asked them, what was going through your mind as you were falling down and, like, you thought you were about to die? Every single one of them said they wish that they wouldn't have done it.
Yeah. They try and make it sound like this process is so warm and caring and comfortable and, like, easy. And, you know, have a cup of coffee, settle the nerves, create a soft atmosphere. And, you know, when I'm ready, I'll just take my place on the couch. It was like,
like, we have to talk about the logistics of what's happening here. That they are stopping her heart from beating. The same thing that they will do with an unborn child. They're going, there's nothing pleasant or good about it. They are injecting this unborn child or this woman with this mental illness and stopping their heart from beating. They are murdering them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, their qualification for this, and actually there's been a huge rise in this, they've had a 20% increase in mental illness related requests for this, mostly amongst young people. And we're saying, oh, it's her right to make this decision. But coming from a place of mental illness.
Yeah.
We call it mental illness for a reason. You're not thinking properly at that time.
Yeah.
It's a mental illness. So let's take from a place of illness, make a very permanent, undoable decision.
Yeah. I've heard this great just synopsis of why, like, there's a million reasons why physician-assisted suicide and euthanasia are wrong, but the clearest and most succinct one is that it's a permanent solution to temporary problems.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
The idea that even the psychiatrist says, well, it's never going to get any better. Apparently, psychiatrists in the Netherlands are all fortune tellers,
apparently.
I guess. They all know the future. I wouldn't be a psychiatrist. I'd do the stock market then and make a lot of money, right? Like, if you're that sure of the future, which we can't be, you can't say it's never, ever in the next 50 years, it's never going to get better.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that brings us back to the topic of control, that there is this belief out there of people who are part of this death cult that, like, control is the highest power. Control dictates dignity. If you are pregnant and you don't want to be pregnant, you can control that and you will feel better. And if you're, this is what they're saying, not what I'm saying. And if you hate your life so much and you hate your mental disability so much, you can control that and kill yourself. And, like, that'll make it better. And it's like, we know as believers that it is out of our control. Mm-hmm. In this life, we will have pain and suffering. Mm-hmm. And it is for a purpose. And they're avoiding it is not necessarily, like, the best thing to do in all circumstances.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely not in these.
Yeah.
Well, the rise in this, I mean, there's globally been a rise in mental illness amongst younger people.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of data leans towards this may be a product of social media, the long-term effects of social media, and looking at everybody's best face forward, best life now kind of stuff. I'm only curating to the public what looks awesome. And so you're looking at that thinking all of your friends are living these great experiences because nobody's going, hey, I'm struggling today. Nobody posts that.
Yeah.
Ever, right? Maybe we should. Because then maybe we'd actually be a community with each other and care about each other. If the only interaction we're having is through a screen.
Yeah.
That's not healthy either. We're not made to do that.
Definitely. So, like what you were saying, these are all just on the rise. And even if it wasn't, this would still be wrong. Even if this was the only death that would occur this year, the only death that would occur in all of human history by physician-assisted suicide, it's still wrong. But we do have to acknowledge that there is this, like, growing trend. Whenever you say it's okay to kill one segment of the population, mm-hmm. you're saying it's okay to kill anybody. So I think it's St. Thomas Aquinas said something to the effect of, if you devalue one segment of the population, eventually you devalue it all.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so we see whenever all of these conversations about euthanasia, they start with, like, oh, well, if somebody's terminally ill and this is just a one-time thing,
right.
It'll be rare, like, just don't even worry. It always ends up to euthanizing people who are otherwise healthy, and it's still wrong in every circumstance, whether the person has, like, the worst illness on the entire face of the earth, and they are going to suffer, and it won't be a pleasant experience. It's still wrong to kill that person. But we see, like, in Canada, euthanasia has actually become the fifth leading cause of death in Canada. And about 1 in 25 people who die in Canada are dying because of euthanasia.
I wonder if we're going to get to Canada because, doggone, man. I mean, they're our northern neighbors, right? Mm-hmm. And it's so close. And we've talked about Canada quite a bit. It starts out, like, if you look up the qualifications, you have to have a serious illness, disease, or disability, be an advanced state of decline that can't be reversed, and experiencing unbearable physical or mental suffering, which that mental suffering is subjective. Well, physical suffering, I guess, is kind of subjective, but still, mental suffering is very subjective. Like, I can't gauge what somebody else, there's no way to gauge what somebody else is actually experiencing. But then we talk about, on this program, it's been a while, but a woman who had a housing issue where her housing conditions were creating health problems for her. It was like, I don't remember all the exact conditions, but instead of the government going, yeah, we can help you find a better housing situation, it was, have you thought about dying?
Yeah.
I thought you had to have a serious state of decline that could not be reversed. It could be reversed. You just needed a better housing situation because the health conditions were bad. Instead, they went, have you thought about dying? And she died because she was like, I guess nobody,
nobody
wants
cares.
Me around or cares.
Yeah.
And it's intellectually, I find it intellectually dishonest to pretend that these isolated, air quotes, isolated incidences don't affect the way people view their own lives. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm imagining every single person out there that has the same disabilities as this woman in the Netherlands who is being, there's just no way this is encouraging them. Like, there's just no way. Even if she's like, this is the right choice for me, it might not be the right choice for you. How could the choice just even be on the table at all? Like, I can't imagine being a young person and like hearing this and not knowing my identity and being like, well, maybe I should do it too. Like,
And imagine the opposite effect, like how, you know, somebody hears that story and they become discouraged and think, well, my own life doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Think of what the opposite effect is whenever we see somebody who inspires in that situation. Somebody comes and speaks value into your life when you don't see it yourself.
Yeah.
And then lifts you out of that. And finally, you can see the light and know your own worth and come to know Jesus Christ. And how we can see the positive ripple effect that happens. That's what we need to be focusing on. That's what, you know, actually solves these problems. But instead, it's just like, oh, no, you know, your life, it really doesn't matter. So go ahead and kill yourself.
Yeah. I mean, we've all know people. We've all had our lives touched by some sort of mental illness, family, friends. We've all lost people. I have lost friends. I've lost family. In my younger years, I'm going to be real honest. I've struggled with depression and feeling like it's never going to get better. It gets better. It gets better.
It does.
It gets better.
Hallelujah.
You don't know when, but it does.
Yeah.
Younger me would be very surprised at how my life turned out. What you don't know at that moment.
Yeah. 28 is nothing.
I'm not going to say that. but I am further along than 28. Yeah. And yeah, it gets better. It changes. You cannot say it will never get better.
Yeah. I'm saying you haven't lived the peak of life at 28. Yeah, you're 28. Fine.
No, the peak of life is not 28.
So just don't. Yeah.
I mean, when you're young and you kind of think you're invincible and you know you have all these ideas for how life's gonna go and maybe those don't work out and you think, oh, it's over. Right. Life is over. It hasn't worked out the way I planned. It's like, make another plan.
Yeah.
You've got a lot of time to change those plans and do other things.
Everything that's better than good ideas, what's better than good ideas is God's ideas.
Yes.
Amen. And I think one thing I'll add is that I hear a lot of people talk about this subject in the context of, okay, like, yeah, you can believe all those things, but like, why should we be fighting, like, to not, why should we tell people what to do, essentially? And, or like, this is so rare, right? But you have to understand there are organizations that are fighting every single day, just like Texas Right to Life is fighting every single day to protect the unborn and to protect people from euthanasia. There are organizations who are doing the same thing, but the opposite. They are going to try to make legislation and they are fighting tooth and nail to make it available to doctors to be able to do this mm-hmm. and face no legal repercussions. And I know right now we might be like on like the side of things where like it's not happening every day and it's in some states and not other states. But if we just stand by and do nothing, it will be in every state mm-hmm. and it will eventually affect your life because it's going to be one of your loved ones in the hospital and your doctor is going to be like, here's the options.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And we don't want that to be an option.
Well, it's in a lot of states in the U.S. It's happened in the U.S. It is a thing. And they've been opening that up to medical tourism.
Mm-hmm.
That's a one-way ticket.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's
tragic.
There are a couple states. Alex Schadenberg has been on this program and talked about there are states who are trying to expand that.
Oregon, it's a disaster.
Yeah, Oregon is bad. I mean, I was reading about Oregon and they have death doulas there. You heard like a birthing doula? They have death doulas that come alongside people in their physician assisted. Suicide. What do they call it? They don't use the word suicide. Physician assisted.
I don't know what they call it in Oregon. Canada is medical aid in dying, so it's kind of like
they use these words, but I mean,
death with dignity.
Yeah, death with dignity. But they have these like death doulas who come alongside them and like help them through their death journey.
Help unalive them.
Yeah.
I mean, it's unhealthcare. Let's call it that. It's unhealthcare.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And again, like, it's not like we're not for compassion. We are for compassion. We want to love people as well as we can and come alongside them and share in their suffering. Mm-hmm. We don't want to tell them that their life doesn't matter and that they should just end it. Yeah. And that like that's just not compassion and that's not dignified.
Mm-hmm. True story.
Yep. Okay, I want to stop talking about this.
Right.
It's heavy and dark, and I like my coffee heavy and dark, not my conversation for too long. Okay.
Some good news.
We do have some good news. There is a statistic that Texas is leading in. I'm not happy about it, but there have been advancements on that front, and we're going to discuss them after this break.
Great news. Texas Right to Life is celebrating our 50th birthday this year. This is half a century of victories that the Lord has given us, but God is not done yet. The battle for life is only increasing as the abortion industry is going underground to promote death and sell abortion. Join us in supporting Texas Right to Life's 50th birthday campaign and chip in with a gift today. Thank you for 50 years of saving lives. And friend, the best is yet to come.
Get your tickets today for the Convention for Life. This is like my favorite convention all year. June 22nd in Houston at Grace Church in the Woodlands. We're gonna level up that pro-life knowledge and you are gonna be a pro-life expert. We're gonna hear from an amazing lineup of speakers to help you defend your beliefs, including author Danielle D'Souza Gill. If that D'Souza name sounds a little familiar, yeah, Dinesh's daughter. It's going to be an amazing time. We are going to celebrate the anniversary of the overturn of Roe v. Wade, and we're going to look forward and talk about some of the issues facing our movement. Get your tickets at conventionforlife.com. All the details and links below, conventionforlife.com. We'll see you in June. Welcome back, friends. I hope to see you at Convention for Life. It's going to be a lot of fun. I have learned a lot of things at our convention over the last few years, and now they're crazy enough to let me speak at this thing. I don't know, boss.
Yeah, we'll see.
I'm not sure I belong on the same platform with the other speakers, but
it'll be amazing.
Just happy to be there. Good. So it's going to be an awesome time. Promo code podcast for a 20% off discount. 20% off discount. And if you get your ticket before the 15th, it's really cutting it short because this is, you've got very little time. But if you get your ticket before the 15th, that is the best sale available. The lowest price possible, plus the discount code podcast. Like, that's as cheap as it's going to get, guys. Mm-hmm. It's like $60, something like that.
Jeez.
I'm not looking at the math right now, but...
You'll figure it out when you get there.
Yep. Okay. Speaking of math, there is a statistic that Texas is leading the nation in, according to KLTV. Did not know this stat. This article is on our website. infant abandonment. Mm-hmm. That's not good. There is, it's not the solution, but it's a solution. And we are happy that this is happening. So Texas has a baby Moses law, one of early states to do this, mm-hmm. where
we were the if first.
I was not sure if we yeah. were like the first or near the first.
Quick tangent alert. Okay, so kind of tangent. Texas was the first state ever to have a baby Moses law. This is where, if a mom or a dad has a newborn child and they're like, I can't take care of this kid, then the parents can bring the child to a fire station or a hospital somewhere with like 24-hour
right.
employees and surrender their child there, leave their child there, no questions asked. This is a really great alternative because you see these horror stories of parents who leave their child in the dumpster or like in the back alley or something right. like that. So good alternative to have a safe place and parents knowing that they can bring their child somewhere. Texas became the first state to have one of these laws in 1999 because we had 13 children abandoned within 10 months in our state. And we still lead the nation in infant abandonment.
Apparently so. So there's definitely a lot of work to do on this front. Mm-hmm. But now this is in Abbott, sorry. Multiple articles. Abilene. They have installed a box at the fire department mm-hmm. where you can place the child in the box. And when you close it up, the fire department is alerted mm-hmm. that there is a child for pickup.
Yeah.
And this is the first kind of anonymous drop-off available. But this is a huge step towards saving the lives of these children who would be otherwise abandoned in terrible places like the dumpster.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good news because, I mean, this is the first baby box that we have in all of Texas that's there in Abilene. And it was really exciting because the community actually was the one that initiated this. So a local pro-life group raised about $20,000 to install one of these boxes because they're very sophisticated. There's like cushion, there's like it's temperature controlled, very important in Texas. Then there's like the alert system that goes into mm-hmm. the fire station or wherever you have this baby box. So the local activists were the ones who made this happen and pulled it together. And, you know, it actually, these boxes do save lives. It's very exciting.
They definitely do. Normally we wouldn't say put a child in a box.
Yeah.
But this is definitely a better option than some alternatives. Mm-hmm. I think part of the story, there is great news here that this is a thing. There are 52,000 fire stations in the United States. So we've got one now. We have a long way to go. We can get there.
Yeah.
But it's going to take some time and some effort. And I also think that for those that think the pro-life work is done in Texas, abortion is outlawed, and we don't have anything to do now. If child abandonment is the highest in Texas of anywhere in the nation, we need to work on helping support these moms, mm-hmm. obviously. And that's not fixing their access to abortion. That's not an answer. That is not the answer to this. But how we come alongside them with pregnancy resource centers and letting them know about the availability of those resources. There's a lot of awesome programs. Texas has like the best program mm-hmm. and we used to call it Alternatives to Abortion. Now it's Thriving Texas Families.
Yes.
It's branding.
Right.
Effectively, it does the same thing plus some more things. These are resources available to moms in crisis pregnancy situations through these pregnancy centers until the child is
two years old, three,
something like that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's I've got a couple of kids. That's a really hard stage of life. So, yeah, that assistance is very valuable. And Texas, you should be proud that you have the best program in the country for this.
Yeah.
But we need to work on getting the word out that this is a thing that exists.
Yeah. And to put them in more communities. Like Abilene right now is the only community that has a baby box like this. Abilene, shockingly, is not the largest town in Texas. As a West Texan, I can say this.
You can.
So Yeah, yeah. But I'm very proud of our West Texas family there getting it done. And now we need to do more. And I was actually really encouraged over the weekend seeing when we posted this on social media, people in the comments were like, how can I make this possible in my community? So if you're interested, let's get it going.
People definitely are interested. I had a funny story. I was getting blood work done. Okay. And this is going to make sense. And working in the pro-life movement, you never know when someone's going to be like, what do you do for your job? And as this woman was sliding a needle into my arm.
Oh, boy.
She was like, so what do you do for work? And I was like, I work for a nonprofit.
Like, let me just make sure that
needle's
okay.
Well, let's wrap this up first.
Yeah.
And I told her where I worked, and she was actually really friendly and was like, that's amazing. She said, I really love the idea of those baby boxes.
Really?
Yeah. And I was like, and I actually hadn't really heard about it. I knew it was a thing that you could bring a baby to a fire department, but I didn't know about this box. And so anyways, I had heard that and I was like, oh, that's amazing. So I definitely think people are interested in learning new ways to help on the other side of birth.
Yeah.
Because we're not just pro-birth.
Oh, shock. News.
Can I say, we all have that anxiety of like, when people go, well, what do you do? And you're like, oh, here we go. This might become a very... We typically have very good interactions after that. I don't know what we're so
It's that one interaction that lingers with you.
There's one of our coworkers who is getting her hair cut. And somebody asked her, the hairdresser asked her, where do you work? She got the worst haircut of her life. She's the one who says this. So
I didn't know this story.
That is why sometimes we have to be careful of just like, what are you doing to me right now? But you know what? It always leads to, it leads to something. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I'll say if you're not in a situation, and this goes for all your beliefs, not just that because we work in the pro-life movement, you might be pro-life and it might get into a situation where someone asks, but you should always answer confidently unless it'll ruin your haircut or you'll
just wait until after the scissors are down
in a medical situation.
You know, as I would say, as it grows back.
True.
Yeah, that's true.
You know
too.
What?
Yeah.
Take the hit for Jesus.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah,
take the hit for Jesus and the babies.
Yeah. I'm just like, let's see what happens. Let's go for it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so other people are figuring out that these baby boxes exist.
And mm-hmm. like, yeah,
people are excited about them.
Yeah.
Do you think we should have baby boxes everywhere? Like, come on, let's make this happen.
Yeah, just to like defend the rest of Texas, the reason why these baby boxes aren't more common and why Abilene has the first one is because it wasn't legal to have like this anonymous option until last year. So 1999, we had our baby Moses law. But if you have like a child, you have to give them to an employee like in person. There wasn't like, okay, well, is there somewhere like, can I leave the baby on the doorstep essentially? So that was not legal until last year. So now it's legal to have that anonymous option and to have these like safety devices. And so that's why we have the first baby box in Abilene and hopefully many more to come.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Awesome. Yeah, I think that is an amazing option to a very complicated problem. And I think that also highlights that we've got some work to do in letting people know the resources available.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's get it done.
Yep. So we do have a lot of work to do, friends. So talk to your friends and neighbors. You never know who needs that information. So then they can help the next person they encounter. You know, like we have conversations with people and then you don't know who they're going to tell about that conversation. Oh, I just learned that there's this thing. Texas has a program. You just go to this pregnancy center and talk to them. Mm-hmm, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, friends, educate yourselves about these amazing options in the state of Texas that apparently other states haven't caught on yet because they're not as cool as us.
And after you do that, if you're like, man, what else can I do? Go to TexasRightToLife.com and donate.
Yeah.
Because we do this all the time, 24/7. We are working with the law. We are working with education to try to make our state and our country and our world a place that respects the dignity of human life, both at the beginning and the end.
If you appreciate the information you get in this podcast, if you like the laws that are getting passed, such as this change to the Baby Moses Law that helps along the way for this anonymous option. If you like having these kinds of programs in the Texas budget, let me tell you, they have to be fought for. They try and take the stuff out every year for other, everybody's got another project and they're like, oh, we can just borrow, you know, $50 million from that.
Not to mention all the other organizations working against our movement and everything. So that's another episode for another day.
Goodness.
That is another project for another day. So friends, like, subscribe, share, donate, educate yourself on the options in Texas. Pray for Canada, pray for the Netherlands. And honestly, it gets better. If you are personally struggling, give us a call. It gets better. Okay? We love you, and we will see you next time. Thanks for watching.